talking all things wound care. This is The Pressure Effect, brought to you by Smith & Nephew.
Welcome to The Pressure Effect from Smith & Nephew. I'm your host, Dr. Lee Rutzi. Today, we're discussing health system standardization of prophylactic dressings, a critical topic for anyone managing wound care programs. Joining us is Scott Filgo. With over 20 years in the medical field and extensive experience opening wound care centers across the country, Scott brings a unique perspective on the operational and financial realities of standardization. Let's dive into how health systems can successfully implement standardized prophylactic dressing protocols. Welcome, Scott. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. This is a wonderful opportunity to talk about this.
So you've opened and developed wound care centers all over the country, and now you serve as executive director of outpatient and inpatient wound care and hyperbaric services for WellStar Health System in Metro Atlanta. Can you tell us a little bit about the journey that has led you there and what your present focus is in your relatively new role?
Yeah, so my background started soon as I was 18. My mother was an emergency trauma nurse, and she worked at an inner city level one trauma center. And I turned 18, and she says, all right, you're on the 18 and out plan, right? So you got to get a job. And she got me an interview at the hospital. I was 18 years old. I graduated from high school on May 27th, and I was working full-time by June 6th, is what she had for me. I worked through and worked as a tech in the ER. I worked as a surgical tech in the OR for several years while I was going to school with my undergrad degree, went to graduate school for physician assistant. And I did that for several years. And I got pulled into wound care as a provider in the beginning at a different hospital. One of my mother's best friends, Jane, is the one that pulled me into that. She says, hey, Scott, you got to come and see this. They want me to do this hyperbaric stuff at this hospital, and it's really neat. You need to check this out. And I did, and I ended up getting hired, and I worked there as a provider for a period of time until I actually became the manager of that wound center, grew that wound center, and moved on from there. And every time that I moved on, I moved up. And I went from just a program manager to a director role, worked at a couple other hospitals in the Metro Detroit area, and grew their programs before I was working with a very small wound care and hyperbaric facility company. And they asked me to say, hey, would you be interested in going to Florida? That's when we were talking about Citrus, Florida, and started a brand new program there. Was there for several years before I left and went to the other side of Florida in South Florida and built their program. And I got recruited back up to Michigan, which was really interesting. I had three centers up there. And then I am here in my current role at WellStar as the executive director, where we have five outpatient wound centers and we have 12 hospitals across the Georgia area. And I have been with them for over 10 years now. And we have worked, or I have worked very diligently to grow the program from one center to all six. At one point, I had six centers, and we have just been extremely successful. Our program is great because of the amount of certified wound ostomy nurses that we have across our system, both inpatient and outpatient. They have to be certified. We started that many years ago, and I have about 50 across the system. You need that many to cover all that. And we were working on a project of standardization, especially when COVID hit, and we were deemed a necessary service so that we remained open, and having to source certain products and trying to get products, as we all know that we were scrambling during that period of time. And we started to realize that, hey, if we're going to be using this product, it doesn't make sense for somebody else at another hospital to be using a different prophylactic dressing. And so therefore, when we started to look at this, one hospital was looking at the Smith & Nephew products, the Aleve and Life Foam, great product. we did a trial across our system and then ended up standardizing that across our system, which really, when we look back at it, made a significant difference in our hospital-acquired pressure injuries. And we are also able to reduce cost significantly with just going with one product.
So let me stop you right there, Scott, just for a minute. So right now, you've gotten through that COVID period. You've standardized with Aleve and Life across the system. Interestingly, some years ago, I was the medical director for a 5-hospital system in Buffalo, New York, and we did a similar thing. This was now 10 years ago and did a trial with Aleve and Life and standardized that across the system. So a couple of thoughts. First of all, I'm smiling thinking about your introduction to wound care, and it's such a typical story that most of us ended up in wound care purely by chance or by accident. We knew somebody who said, come over here and see this. Same thing happened to me. A good friend down in Miami said, come on down and see our wound care and hyperbaric program. This was at Mercy Hospital in Miami. And I went back from there to our CEO in Buffalo, New York, and said, you know, we ought to do this. So none of us were born wound care people, but we got into it and we loved it. The second point is, my second observation is your comment about the value of WOC nurses. And I could not agree more. They're an absolutely essential component of any good quality program. And I happen to be married to one, as a matter of fact.
Wow.
But she tells people, she said, Lee is my medical director, but I'm his boss. So let's start with the big picture. In your mind, what's the value of standardization when it comes to prophylactic dressings across a health system? And I think you've already addressed a part of this, but let's look at that a little bit once again.
We really wanted to have continuity of care across the system. And that was really important because there's some of the nurses that would work at one facility would also work at other facilities. And to have that same piece of equipment, that same dressing for them each where they were, there was continuity there. Then there was continuity of on the inpatient side versus then on the outpatient side as well. And having that in the continuity, consistent care ended up with a better benefit to the patient so that you're not changing up. We know with wound care that you got to come up with a really good plan, got to get a great dressing onto that patient. And we always want to make sure that we leave it alone for a period of time, correct? So with the actual part of doing and having the same product, you're not changing. You can't go from a silver product 1 week and go to a, you know, Hydrofera blue the next week or go to some other collagen dressing the following week. The wound gets all confused and it doesn't know what to do because it's being bombarded. So with that continuity, with that type of dressing, it ends up being more favorable to the total plan of getting somebody healed. But also the other benefit to that was, number one, it worked. Everybody worked towards this and bought into it. That was the hardest piece. Standardization, as you probably know, when you're doing it for your 5-hospital system, standardization and trying to get that buy-in from everybody at the same time takes some time.
Right.
I mean, we started this plan and it took a good, so our audience knows, it took me a good 3 years for full implementation and buy-in. First year, we've got the product and we're educating on it. Second year, it's been around for a while, so people are more familiar with it. And then by the third year, it has finally become routine. Along with that part, using those dressings and using the same line of dressings for other areas of the body was the financial piece. Buying into, we looked at one point, I had 22 different SKUs, vendors of silver products at one point. How do you know which one to use? How does the general nursing staff that is on the floor walk into a supply room and they've got 15 choices? We looked at it to say standardization is, this is your choice.
And standardization also means simplification to a certain extent. As you said, it eliminates having to stand at the cabinet or the Pyxis and scratch your head and say, which one of these 10 or 12 dressings am I going to use? I laughed at your comment about the wound getting confused when you change dressings too fast. It's funny that those of us who have been in wound care for a long time, we now confer cognitive properties onto the wound itself.
Yeah, we do. And take property and ownership of that wound, where that wound is now my wound. Even though it's on your body, I own it.
That's right. So the next part of this question was, what challenges arise when there isn't standardization? And I think you largely have answered that. It just increases the confusion among selections.
Yes, correct.
All right. Before you can standardize, you need to know what you're working with. So how do you conduct a system-wide inventory of the various tools and dressings currently being used before you get ready to introduce something else?
We have a couple really great committees that come together: our hospital-acquired pressure injury, our value analysis meetings, and then our advanced wound care committee system meeting as well. And it's at those meetings where people say, hey, I was at a conference and I saw this, and we've been using this other product, but can we look at something else? Or there's a different choice of a category within advanced wound care products where supply chain is coming to you to say, hey, we need to pare this down. What is it that we can look at within this category to get everybody to agree upon in that category to help with starting that period of standardization? Getting people in those meetings, again, their buy-in, their feeling for it, talking about it, working with the vendors, and then working with each one of the facilities individually. We have a very large system. You can't just do and start something like you would send out an email blast to a bunch of people. It has to be methodically thought about on how to, all right, do we have the product? Do we have enough for the product? And we're a huge system. Just for the standard sacral dressing, the one size, I use over 400,000 of those dressings per year. Just that one size.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I have to have inventory. I want the buy-in from the company and from the reps. And we start at one place. We ask, okay, who wants to trial this first? All right. We get 5 out of the 9 hospitals to try. It comes back. We vote on it as a quorum. And then we start to move forward from there.
All right. Once you have a product in mind, how do you establish an analysis process or an evidence-based selection criteria for choosing which prophylactic dressings to standardize on? There are, as you well know, there are lots of foams on the market, and not all are created equal. So if you're trialing a new product, you're comparing against the previous standard of care, what do you base your selection criteria on?
Evidence-based research first. Again, having the knowledge of the certified wound nurses really do help to guide that process by, all right, let's take a look at this and let's understand the science behind this first. What is the efficacy of this dress? What are we looking at? What are we trying to achieve here for that selection?
Interestingly, I hosted a podcast last week with Dr. Amit Geffen, whom, as you know, has done a lot of work and has studied a lot about the mechanical forces of pressure injury development, as well as taking a really close look and having a lot to do with the dressing that we're talking about today, the Smith & Nephew product.
Especially with the Complete Care, our system is actually in the process of, I think that we're pretty well, we started it probably about 8 months ago when the product was introduced, and we were going from the Leave in Life to the Complete Care now because of that science. That science was just a huge eye-opener when I got to sit down and was introduced to the mechanics of it and the shearing force and so on.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And Dr. Geffen is not only brilliant in his career, but he has such a very nice way of explaining some pretty complex science in practical, real-world terms that help folks to understand, okay, that's why this dressing is different than another one. And I think you may have already addressed this. Who needs to be involved in the approval process for standardizing prophylactic dressings? I'm pretty sure you've already answered that by describing the multi and interdisciplinary committees within your system.
Yeah. So the first part is we start with having a product introduced because that somebody actually brought it to the committee and wanted to talk about it and see what other people said and to look at that. And then we bring it to that committee. And then we take it to supply chain and said, okay, next part is, hey, is this company, are they on contract with us? So which GPO are they with? And are we allowed to access that? What is our pricing? Then it goes to the business analysis aspect of value analysis and supply chain, where they do an analysis of, all righty, how much is this going to cost us? How much is this going to save us? And then after we get those approvals, making sure that the product is in, everybody has passed all their security marks for the company and the vendor, then we get an approval from a higher up within value analysis, comes back essentially to me to say, hey, yeah, let's go ahead and move forward with that. And then we bring it back to the committee. And then the committee says, yeah, let's do a trial. And then after the trial, it goes back to the committee. And the committee says, hey, this is really working for us. And then we take a vote. And then we agree upon it. And then we move forward with, then it goes back to value analysis and supply chain. And then it goes back to contracting and negotiation, obviously, for pricing. Then once all that is done and finally gets loaded into the system to be able to order, we have to wait for the other part of supply chain that actually ordered the supplies to our warehouse, make sure that we get that in. And then it finally makes it out to the facility. So it's a lengthy process. It's not something that just says, hey, we've got this and we want to start using this next week. No, this is a multi-month process.
Well, and also, of course, you need to convince the C-suite that financially this makes sense. And I think sometimes our financial and C-suite people, being non-clinical folks, sometimes don't see the value or the cost savings in these dressings as compared to the amount of money that it takes to treat a pressure injury once it develops, to say nothing of the fact that there's no reimbursement if it happens on your watch.
I know that's the one aspect of the financial piece that we actually do and do that analysis with, of how much it's going to cost us, how we're going to do. But I get asked the question all the time, how do we know that this is going to work? Well, I can't prove to you, to the financial leaders of the system, I can't prove to you that I used this and prevented a pressure injury. I can just go to say that, hey, we're experiencing at least 5 or 6 pressure injuries per month at this one facility. Then all of a sudden I change something up and now I'm only seeing 1 to 2, and it's getting better and better and better. That's the value that we got to take back to them and show them. Just not that it's happening. It's going to say, and I don't want it to be, I told you so, even though I told you so, but we do. We take it back and just make sure that, hey, everything that we said that we were doing is honestly working.
Right. Yeah. You can't prove a negative, as you pointed out, but you can show your incidence and prevalence numbers, and that's where the proof is. Between the inpatient and outpatient side, how do you ensure alignment between those two entities, especially in a system as large as yours?
You know, largely that is integrated within our EMR. And that we have that our inpatient and outpatient nurses collaborate a lot, and they are always working together and talking about, you know, hey, we have this patient. I've been seeing this patient. That patient was an inpatient. This is what we did, and I want to get them to the outpatient side.
Okay, so this is built into your electronic health record.
Yeah. So in our facility, in our system, that a nurse on the floor can place a nursing consult for a wound nurse to come and see a patient, come and see a wound. And within that medical record, they will actually, after they see them, they evaluate them, they write down what their recommendations for this patient, how to treat this wound. And then also within that, make mention to patients to follow up at outpatient wound center. Here's the information to do so. It's placed almost as an order and part of their discharge instructions.
Got it. Okay. All right. Needless to say, education is critical anytime there's change. How did you develop a system-wide educational program and training when you brought this new product in?
So with our system that we have clinical nurse leaders at each one of the hospitals, and we work closely with them as well so that they can be, all right, the wound care committee has recommended this. We talked with them on how they want to move about on the education on their side. So we don't dictate the education, we provide the means to get the education and let the facilities choose on how they want to do that. Because each one of the hospitals has their own executive director of nursing, CNO, and so on. They know their hospitals, they know how they like to do that. So we rely on the other resources within the system to assist with that education and working with the vendor to do so.
And I think in many systems, perhaps in yours as well, each hospital has a little bit different personality. Each hospital might have a different focus. One might be primarily an orthopedic hospital. Another one might be a level one trauma center. So, as you said, valuable to allow the leaders of each of those to decide what's the best way to educate everybody within their program.
Yes, exactly.
So what is the most common mistake that you see organizations make? And maybe this answer is built on your past, things that you've seen done really well and things that you've looked at and said, well, maybe we can do better next time. What's the most common mistake you see?
Most common mistake is not doing your due diligence to actually get the buy-in for something like that. And somebody fighting you against change. Everything to do with change, especially in a hospital system, you think about how much change goes on in a nursing unit every week, every month, every year. So change is what needs to really to have that buy-in from them.
Well, yet change management is tough. So maybe to expand on that a little bit, what tips might you have for people in leadership positions that are trying to navigate those cultural and operational shifts that come with, in this case, standardizing prophylactic dressings?
I start with the highest leader on the clinical side at each one of the facilities. I need my CNOs and my executive directors of nursing and so on to be part of this whole change. And I need them as their leader for their system to lead that change and say that this is a good thing. Because if they don't believe in it, you're not going to get it implemented appropriately.
Yeah. Like so many things, top down is the right approach or the best approach.
Yeah. Because it's hard, you know, want my wound care nurses to be known, respected, and taking care of their patients like they should. They shouldn't be fighting from the basement to get up to that level to prove that point. I think that's where my level actually comes in really nicely because I am balanced right there between working with all the clinical staff, but also the mediator to work with all of the executive staff as well.
Right.
Because that's mainly the people that I have meetings with are, hey, what's going on at your facility with wound care and our pressure injury and what's some changes and such? Usually with the CEO, CNO, COO. And that's where I build and cultivate those relationships. And so when I actually have something that I feel that we need and we need to do, that they have that trust in me that, oh, yeah, if Scott needs this, we know that he's going to follow through on that.
Right. Got it. All right. Well, that just about wraps up our conversation for today, but I want to give you a couple of minutes to share some thoughts about anything that we might have missed or something that you feel is especially important in this regard of standardizing prophylactic dressings.
Really, the pearl wisdom for me is we tried to do a system-wide push for a different type of product, for a turning product for our system, and really kind of pushed and rushed that through, and it failed miserably. When you're doing standardization, it really is something that takes time to do. I started my standardization project for trying to standardize several things across our service line. It started back in 2018. And look where we're at here today, 8 years later. And we've been very successful being able to make these changes and these standardizations across the system and have been able to see an impact on the patients and actually lowering our hospital-acquired pressure injury rate. And it really, when I keep going back to it, it really is the time and the buy-in. It was my pearl of wisdom to just make sure that it keeps moving forward, that it doesn't stall out somewhere. That's why I feel that my position is a system position where I sit and I work with all of the different facilities, where a lot of facilities across the country really end up having a couple wound care nurses that are always fighting for something. And it always seems like they're getting blocked by the financial aspect of it.
It sounds like in your case, practice has made pretty much perfect.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Scott, thanks so much for joining us. I think this has been remarkably important information, actually some information that I'm going to recommend that some of my colleagues around the country listen to this podcast, because this is a little bit of a different topic, not 100% clinical, but so critically important for having a successful program. So thank you much. Really appreciate your time today, Scott.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this episode of The Pressure Effect. I want to say a big thank you to Scott Filgo for joining us today and sharing his expertise on building effective pressure injury prevention bundles, as well as the standardization of prophylactic dressings. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a rating or a review. I'm Dr. Lee Rutsey, and I'll see you next time.